Good afternoon, and calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:10 p.m. Thursday, April 6th, in the Max Grunberg Room in the Alaska Capitol. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Ledoux?
Here.
Representative Birch?
Here.
Representative Johnson? Representative Tuck?
Here.
Representative Josephson? Representative Knopf?
Here.
Representative Wolf?
Here.
Representative Kopp? Chair Price Tompkins?
Here, and with six members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you, Martha, Summers, and Alicia for all your help today in facilitating the meeting. Three items on today's calendar. Worth noting that House Bill 190 was initially noticed for today, but as we noted on Tuesday's meeting, we will hear that next week as opposed to today because of limitation on time. The three bills are House Bill 165, Representative Parrish's Act relating to State Personnel Act and Veterans, House Bill 158, Representative Eastman's bill relating to APOC office locations, and House Bill 74, the Governor's bill relating to driver's licenses and the Real ID Act. We will go in that order. First up is House Bill 175 from Representative Parrish. This is the second hearing. I noted on Tuesday, 165. There we go. Second hearing, noted intention to take action on this bill. Thanks for the help there. Representative Parrish, if you could come up if there happen to be any further committee questions, we can go from there. Otherwise, we can move on to public testimony, which was noticed today, and perhaps take action. Are there any questions from the committee for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, that will take us to public testimony. I will open public testimony at this time. I don't see anyone online. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify in House Bill 165? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony at this time. There was an amendment deadline at 5 p.m. yesterday for this bill. We received no amendments, so we will move on from that step in the process. Are there any committee comments on the legislation before a possible motion?
Speechless.
Just rapt awe of the sheer brilliance of the legislation. Representative Parrish, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 165, version 30-LS0558/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, House Bill 165 moves from committee. Thank you very much, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee.
And that takes us to the next item on today's calendar. I'm going to take a brief at ease to check in with our committee aide on another item. The next item on today's agenda is House Bill 158 from Representative Eastman. Same protocol. Representative Eastman, perhaps you could come forward. Are there any lingering questions from the committee on House Bill 158 for the sponsor? Seeing none, I will move on to public testimony and open public testimony. I'm not seeing anyone online, although I should note Heather Hebden from APOC, Executive Director, is online for any questions that may arise. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify in House Bill 158? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. There was a 5 p.m. amendment deadline yesterday. We received no amendments, so there are no amendments to offer. Are there any committee comments on House Bill 158? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my only concern would be, and I'm not even sure it's valid, but the previous requirement was an office in every Senate district, which wasn't happening anyways. And this bill would eliminate that requirement and just require a central office central office, and then other offices would be at the discretion, I guess, of the commission, APOC would decide if they need another office and had the funding. So knowing that there's an office with one person in Juneau, I guess there's been many other offices already closed. So I guess this makes it okay to close the last satellite office. They would still be fulfilling the requirement of one office. I guess that would be my only concern, but they've already not had the other 18 offices or whatever, 13 I think was required because a lot were, Anchorage was sort of, one was satisfying that requirement. So I don't know. I guess that's up to people with the money and APOC, but I guess the one concern is that there's at least one representative of APOC in the state capitol where there's a lot of people needing APOC services.
Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add to what Representative Wool said is that your lobbyists all have offices down here in Juneau. I mean, most of them do. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we kept one personnel down here in Juneau was to accommodate their needs. They have much more reporting requirements than candidates do and legislators do. And so I think that's one of the primary reasons, again, that if there's only one satellite office, the reason why they had it here in Juneau was for the industry.
Yeah, and I'll agree with both the prior speakers. I think it's appropriate to have that office here, and I didn't see this changing any of that structure. For me, this bill seemed to be bringing statute in compliance with practice is how I read this, I think, as you know. I would agree with Representative Wool. The intent's not to close or restructure any offices as I read this. So.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, just as a follow-up, it just states that the commission shall establish a central office. So that could be one statewide, and they would be fulfilling the letter of the law. And I realize the previous statute said more than two, and they weren't fulfilling the letter of the law then. But I would, anyhow.
Yeah. And maybe I'll ask the representative a question. So I think when you presented this, I think you indicated that there's nothing in this that keeps them from opening up 20 offices if they've seen the need. So as you mentioned, it was kind of their discretion. So they could open up one here, Palmer, Kenai, whatever the future need dictated. This didn't restrict them from doing so. So it's simply an organizational decision, if I remember what you said.
Well, that is correct, that there's certainly funding.
A reminder to put yourself
yes,
on the
record. Yes, of course. Representative Eastman from House District 10. And, yes, through the chair, there's nothing other than funding, I think, that would keep them from opening any number of offices. And in a better fiscal environment, maybe that they would go ahead and do that. But there's also no requirement that the central office be in a large city. It could be here in Juneau, and that could certainly suffice if the commission wanted to do that.
And Representative Knopp and Representative Wolf, would it be helpful perhaps to get Ms. Hebden's perspective on all of this? Because ultimately it would be the, I guess, agency's.
I'm good.
I'll go ahead. And Ms. Hebden, if you can hear us, could you speak to the issue raised by, really, Representative Knopp, Tuck, and Wool, and I would add myself to their number, in sort of confirming this understanding that this legislation, whether this legislation will or will not have any impact on the existence of a Juneau satellite office.
Thank you. Yes, for the record, this is Heather Hebden with the Alaska Public Officers Commission, and that is correct. We see very little impact to the agency. As written, the legislation would bring current practice in line with the statutory requirements. We don't believe that, as written, it would require us to close any offices. Rather, it would leave it to the discretion of the commission. And yes, if budgetary constraints weren't a concern, then it is possible we would have various offices. That just isn't the situation right now.
Thank you. Follow-up? Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to commend the sponsor of this legislation, certainly in reading the recommendation from former APOC Commissioner Mark Fish. This is consistent, cleans it up, brings it in compliance with statutes, and it's a good measure. I appreciate the opportunity to take this on.
Thank you. Any further committee comments on House Bill 158? Seeing none, Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 158 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, House Bill 158 moves from committee. Thank you, Representative Eastman. And we will take a brief at ease to prepare for the next bill. Going back on the record, and this brings us to the third item on today's agenda, and we have good economic stimulus for the Southeast Alaska timber industry with lots of paper in front of us. And so there are a variety of amendments in front of us for consideration. Mr. Lardy has also created a crib sheet to guide all of us through the process, which describes amendments J1, which will be Amendment 1, Amendment J.2, which will be Amendment 2, Amendment J.3, which will not be offered today, as it will be redrafted, Amendment J.4, which will be Amendment 4, Amendment J.5, which will be Amendment 5, and so on and so forth through Amendment J.7, which will be Amendment 7. It's also by sort of collective request, I think, going to be the case that we will recess to the call of the chair today and reconvene at a time to be determined to continue consideration of the business, as there's interest in sort of further review of the CS and talking with various interested parties. But for now, we can start with his amendments and start with Amendment 1. And I guess I should also note, also distributed to members and previously distributed electronically, was a letter from Deputy Commissioner Rydell, who has also just joined us in the room, with concerns and feedback on the CS, with line page and line citations, which some of these amendments will speak to. So at this time, Madam Vice Chair, if I could entertain a motion for Amendment J.1. Quickly, Representative Birch and then Representative Tuck.
I'm just, could you map out the public process as far as any sort of additional public testimony? Is that, I mean, do you make the amendments and then open it up for public testimony, or how does that work?
At this time, I'm not planning to invite testimony as sort of needed, and I think to offer perspective on some of the amendments, but take action on amendments. And go for possible committee action.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Tuck?
Also, point of order, if may, Mr. Chair, I just, I'm sorry if this document was already passed out, the letter, but it looks like it's a pretty good sectional analysis. If we can have the administration, before we start taking amendments, kind of go through their concerns so we can make sure that we're, I'm not missing anything that they may have that through these amendments.
I think that's a great suggestion. Let's start with that, Ms. Rydell, if you're available. And for Representative Knopp.
You have to run the state affairs. I'm having a little hurt over there. My staff will remain here to keep me up to speed, and I'll be back as quickly as I can.
Good luck on the other side, Representative Knopp. I'll phrase that a little differently. this is the letter that was just distributed. Deputy Commissioner Rydell, if you could walk us through the letter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Leslie Riedel. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. Also, I would indicate probably online, I'm hoping, is Marla Thompson, the Director of the DMV, and also Captain Dan Loudon, who is from Public Safety, because as I mentioned last week, there are some public safety issues that the Department of Public Safety felt strongly about, and also our attorney for for the DMV specifically, Mike Stanker. So I may have them chime in as well, because I'm not an expert on especially the DPS issues. They're the experts. So we sent this letter this morning. Sorry we didn't get it to you yesterday. We were working on it all day. As you know, the other night I testified, and I tried to tell you as much as I knew based on reading the bill for about half hour. So this letter wanted to clarify anything that I missed the other night or if I got anything wrong. I know specifically I got something wrong to Repla Du that I had given her some misinformation. So we did want to correct that in this letter, too. And then also, as we had the chance to go through it more carefully, there were a couple other things, especially on the public safety side, that I just didn't know much about, and so I didn't talk to the other night. So on page 2 of my letter,
quick interjection, Representative Birch.
Just are we operating off of House Bill 74A? Or I just want to make sure what's the... J. Okay. Great.
Yeah, and all the amendments correspond to that.
Perfect.
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Birch, my letter and the lines also refer to J as well. Yeah, yes. So page 1, line 10, and again, some of this will be a little bit duplicative of what I said the other night, so if I'm going too fast, tell me to slow down, but I don't want to repeat myself completely. But page 1, line 10, that was the cost increase that I think Representative Wool had put forward in an amendment before. And Representative LeDu, just to jump over, you had asked what the total cost would be. So for an ID, the total cost would be $25 under this, and the total cost for a license would be $30. So
on that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I think that that pays it down within 5 years at the $10 level.
Through the chair, Representative talked about five. Depends on how many people get a card, but yes, that's okay. Our guess.
And thank you. And so I know that we currently have a fiscal note that doesn't reflect any dues or fees. What in the future, what would the cost be in being part with AAMVA?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, we're already a member of AAMVA, AMBA, so I don't know that it would be a fiscal note in this bill, I guess, or unless I'm misunderstanding your question.
If I may, Mr. Chair. I know we're a member of AAMVA, but isn't there aren't we getting these services for a period for free? So what would be the cost in the future for these services?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, sorry, I didn't understand your question, what you are asking. Actually, I'd have to ask Marla Thompson to comment on what the future fees would be, please.
Ms. Thompson, if I can attempt to maybe reframe the question, will DMV be paying any fees, I guess, maybe specifically to participate in S2S above and beyond what DMV has always been paying throughout its recent history to be a member of AMVA? Will there be any sort of specific AMVA-related fees in association with the passage of this legislation? Ms. Thompson, can you hear us?
I think I'm on mute.
Oh, great. We can hear you now. Sorry about that. If you heard the question, could you put yourself on the record and speak to the question?
Yes. Hi, this is, for the record, this is Marla Thompson. I'm the director of the DMV. And through the chair, Representative Tuck, there is a current, it depends on how many IDs and driver's licenses are produced. And we have in our current budget what we think we are going to be able to, what we use. And so it is in the budget today. But we do pay a per fee. So I can get to all the different fees. But it's already, for the things that we do today, is already currently baked in the budget. And in the fiscal note is everything for the birth certificate and the passport disks, because those are new.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ms. Chair, can you repeat that last part, please?
Yes, so the check on the birth certificate and the check with the save and the check with the passports, all of those require a per use fee, and so we have that in the fiscal note worked into that. And again, it's just based on how many people use it. It's a shared cost.
And Ms. Thompson, there's a question from Representative Ledoux.
So I'm getting like really confused. What does this have to do? What's the DMV going to do with the passports? Because if you already have a passport, why are you going to come in for this DMV, real ID card?
So the passport, I'm sorry, through the chair, the passport would just be verifying that that's a valid passport. So there's fees just to do those verification, and it's one of the requirements of Real ID.
Follow up.
All right, this is like something totally new. And I'm seeing Ms. Rydell, who obviously wants to respond here. So.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. So I get your point. Your question is, why would someone get a real ID if they have a passport? Sometimes people bring in passports just as their form of identification to show who they are. They might still be using a passport. Oh, you're right, in a non-compliant. Sorry, I'm going to trip myself up. In a non-compliant, we would not check the passport database. But if they brought it in as their first document and they still wanted to get a real ID, because personally, I'd get a real ID. I don't want to carry my passport. I'd get a real ID. So I might bring my passport in as my verifier identification.
Okay.
Representative Wall.
I don't know if now's the time, but based on Representative Ledoux's question, and I sort of understand the process because we've had more than a couple meetings on this, but I understand when the Real ID, if and when the Real ID requirement kicks in and I need to go get one, I have to go to the DMV with other ID besides just my driver's license, at least the first time for my first Real ID. So I'm going to bring in my birth certificate, my passport, let's say, assuming I can find them. And again, if you want to go through this the thing, but, you know, what we've never really had is what exactly is going to happen when I go in with these documents, and I'm guessing, and I maybe have an educated guess, they're going to take my document, they're going to scan it. They're going to take that scan, they're going to send it somewhere to verify it, and I'm not even sure what verifying really means, but to verify it, because in the past you would just look at it and go, oh, that looks pretty good, here's your license, Mr. Wall. But now you have a more stringent process of verification, which I imagine involves scanning these documents, handing them back to me, sending them off to somewhere else to verify them, to make sure I am who I am and I don't have another passport in another place that has the same identity markers or pointers or whatever that means. So is that what happens?
Through the chair, Ms. Representative Wool, not exactly. Marla, again, hopefully can jump in if I don't get exactly right. We don't send your documents anywhere else. We do have to retain them. Real ID says that we have to retain them. But we would do a check through the passport database to make sure that it's you. We don't send your papers to the passport database and they send them back to us. It's while you're standing there that we're doing this work. Am I correct, Marla?
You are absolutely correct.
Maybe Representative Ledoux, allow one follow-up, and then I want to sort of reel us back to the letter. Representative Ledoux, if you have a follow-up.
So you've got to bring in your birth certificate now, or you got to bring in your passport. So are you going to be able to get this real ID within the day, just like a regular driver's license?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, right now you don't get your driver's license on the day that you come in. We produce them outside, so it would be the same process as your current driver's license is, where we process them with the company in Indiana. You get
a last follow-up.
Because it seems like the main reason to pass this bill is because it's going to be so much easier and so much quicker than getting a passport card. So how long does it take? I go down to DMV, and I haven't been paying any attention to this real ID thing because I'm just trying to live my life, make my living, etc. And I realize that I need to get on the base tomorrow or this afternoon. So I go over to the DMV. Am I going to get something that same day that's going to let me on the base?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, like you do today, if you go in, we do give you a paper copy, and it gets mailed to you. Your actual card gets mailed to you within 10 days to 2 weeks is about the average. So whether you can get on, your second question, whether you can get on a base, I'm sorry, I don't know exactly what the base rules are about whether the paper copy will get you on. I would have to have someone probably from DMVA who might be on the line too answer a question like that.
Thank you. Can I just make a comment?
You can make a comment, and then we'll go back to the letter.
Yeah, I would think that that would be actually kind of important to know because I've been concerned that if we don't get these real IDs, that people are going to be quick, who want to get quickly onto the base in order to do their jobs, etc., that we have to pass real IDs so that they can get there within, like, that afternoon. And if you can't use the paper, that's going to be a significant problem.
Comment, Deputy Commissioner?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. If we do pass the bill this session, we will have another waiver and while we implement this bill and or implement the law. And so our hope is that you're right, there's still going to be someone we miss, absolutely. But we're hoping that with a time that we have time to get people in, get their stuff processed, lots of PR campaign and whatever to let Alaskans know that they need to get this done. We won't get everybody, but hopefully we get the bulk of most people.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to go back to the letter, but preserve the opportunity to return to this. Is this relate?
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but the response from the administration poses a lot of questions. And so I don't want to get away from finding out the details of their response to clearly understand. So I don't want to move away from that just yet.
What I'd like to do is we can sort of tour through the letter, and especially areas that we feel there are stones left unturned, we can circle back to them.
Sure, and I can draft another letter for the department too, but hopefully they will respond to me rather than passing it on to somebody else and making me have to look for it. But yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Noted. We can bookmark that and return to it as needed. I think you were on line one,
page one, line 10. Through the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next section is page 2, lines 5 through 7. And this is actually, like I said, our attorney's online. I'll try to explain it, but if you have more questions for me, I may ask him to weigh in. So there are other laws in our books, on our books, in the state books, that apply to records retention that come into play here, and so we thought if you added the words or other federal and state law, that might help make sure that we were not in conflict with other record retention laws. Page 2, lines 11 and 12. We touched on this the other night, that this made Alaska non-compliant. In addition, this is where public safety got in touch with us, that they have some issues with this. Sorry, let me find my lines here. Keeping an image of the applicant's face, whether or not they replied for a renewal or not. Real ID does require us to keep the image, so that's why it would make us non-compliant. But if it's up to you, Mr. Chair, if you want to hear from public safety about their concerns of the with the photo retention.
Maybe not at this time, okay. Partly because I think for some of these there will be amendments and
sure.
We can
okay.
Bring in
all right.
Testimony at that
good question,
time.
Mr. Chair.
Question from Representative Tuck.
Thank you. So I know that we learned recently that some of the provisions of Real ID, the act itself, doesn't require some of the things that the contractor or AAMVA requires. So when you say that this is a requirement of Real ID, is it really the Real ID Act or is it the AAMVA's requirements?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, it's my understanding this is part of the Real ID Act, not the AMVA's requirement has to deal with just the state-to-state system, and there aren't photos in the state-to-state system.
Okay, and if I may, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
But the state-to-state system, which is underneath AMVA, does require the last five digits of your Social Security number. So I just didn't know if this was, because that's not a requirement of the Real ID Act. Just making sure that, okay, well, I'll look it up myself. I'll find out.
Through the chair, I understand your question, but no, there are no photos in the state-to-state system, so that is not from AMBA.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Item number four, I think, Ms. Riddle.
Sure, thank you. Page 2, lines 13 through 20. Again, I believe I talked about this the other night. This is about records retention, and again, we feel that this makes the state non-compliant. Page 2, lines 26 and 27. I talked about this the other night. We do have requirements that some of our employees have to have some kind of ability to get on base or to fly, and so we wanted to see if we could insert unless federally compliant identification is required for employment so that we could continue with that practice. Hearing no questions, page 2, lines 29 through 31. If you would like later, I would like Public Safety to weigh in on this, but again, they had some concerns about not keeping the images of the photo images longer than a year after the expiration of an ID card. And so they suggested that we delete that. Page 3, lines 2 through 7. This provision would require the DMV to store paper for non-compliant driver's license and IDs. There's several things that we mentioned here, customer service costs, security, and fraud prevention. I talked about this again the other night, too, but again, I would just like to say one of our goals at the DMV is also efficiency and weighing the public privacy, which, of course, we're concerned about, but also giving the best customer service when a person comes in. And so we do address some of our concerns there about how long it would take and how we could serve people. People wouldn't be able to get a license online anymore, which I think people have come to expect. So I do think that would take some education when people weren't allowed to do these kinds of things that they thought they could before. Because this would be a change in our process.
And Paige, I have a question.
Sure, sorry.
So you're not even going to be able to get your renewal online? Once you get a Real ID, you can't do your renewal online anymore?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, sorry, I no, this is the non-compliant cards in this version. The compliant cards, we're not required to store the paper. We would be able to put them online, so you could do an online for the compliant. But in this version, if we have to store things in paper, that means you have to come in again for your renewal because we won't be able to look it up. So you'll have to come in.
Representative?
That's just this version of the bill.
Sure. Representative will do.
Okay. I'm confused because now you can renew. And why would... I don't understand why you wouldn't be able to renew your non-compliant. I'm totally not following that.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. So right now, basically all of our licenses right now are non-compliant, correct?
Okay.
And so we are storing, when you bring us in your paperwork right now, we've been storing them online. And so when you're renewing, we can go online. We can check that out. We can renew your license and send it off. A person, even though you still apply online, a real person still looks at your application to make sure that everything's there. So if we're not allowed to retain your paperwork past the expiration, or if we're not allowed to retain your paperwork online, you're going to need to come back in physically to renew.
While you're thinking, Representative Ledoux, can I allow Representative Knopf a question?
You know, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I'm kind of right with Representative Ledoux trying to understand it. So with the real ID compliant, the paperwork is retained somewhere, and so you guys are good with that. So then we can, in fact, renew compliant online. But because now we can't store non-compliant data online, we have to come in and do it in person. Is that how I...
Through the chair, in this version of the bill, yes. We're being told in this version of the bill to keep things in a paper copy for the non-compliant.
So it's interesting that... So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it's interesting that I got a driver's license when I moved here in late 79, keep renewing it, never did any more paperwork, but that particular paperwork is still adequate today, if that's what you have to reference 40 years after the fact. I mean, it makes no sense to me. Why would we do that?
Through the chair, but you had to come in, I think, in those 40 years to verify who you were. You were able to walk in with your driver's license. We looked at you. You looked probably pretty close to the same picture as you were before. So you did come in probably once or twice in that time.
I think there was a period there when we updated when we went to licenses through the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think when we started going to out-of-state issuance or something, I think there was a state requirement everybody had to come back in with some documentation or something sticks in my mind. But it's been a while, but my point is, regardless of the time frame, the paperwork gets old. I mean, after 9 years, none of us look really the same, so I'm a little surprised that that's an issue. So I'll leave it at that. We're not going nowhere. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ledoux, then Representative Wall.
I don't understand why we're changing for the non-compliant IDs the way we've done it before. And I guess I'm not sure who to ask the question.
That might be a question for our office, and I actually might ask if Mr. Glatt has any comment on that as well.
For the record, my name is Eric Glatt. I'm a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska. So to the question of the current CS and the provision in the current CS that applications must only be kept in paper form, I believe that an amendment that's going to be introduced later today would resolve that and no longer require DMV to only hold paper applications. Which would resolve this question and allow DMV to continue operating as it currently does and allowing for online renewals and other things like that.
And I should note, so a variety of the concerns as we tour through this letter will be spoken to in Amendments J1, 2, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So we can keep that in mind. But any other questions on this particular section of the Department of Administration's letter? Well, okay. Right. Representative Wall, that's right. You had a question.
I did have a question, and it had to do with renewing licenses that maybe Ms. Rydell can
certainly
answer, or Ms. Thompson, which was, and I guess the CS is less stringent for the non-compliant than we're currently, because the CS is saying we can only keep paper and that it has to be destroyed, and the amendment will adjust that. I guess my question, just trying to understand how this all works, if I want to renew my license online and you've retained some information, it makes it easier, but it's every 10 years or the current license. I don't know what the renewal period is. And I must have to go in and get a new photo every once in a while, I would think. I mean, I understand you have my name and all my numbers, but if I'm getting a new license, don't I need a new photo every couple of decade or so? I mean, and I don't do that online, I don't think.
Through the chair, Representative Wall, actually, yes. Yeah, so right now, we renew every 5 years. This bill would change it to every 8 years, and you can renew once online. So, yes, that for the reasons you just mentioned, you probably do look different 16 years later than you might 8 years later. And so also it allows us to check other things. Can you still see? Are you, you know, eligible for a driver's license? It makes you come back in for
hair
that
color,
reason.
Weight, it all changes. Yeah.
Number eight in the letter.
Okay, sorry, got lost where it was. Hold on. Number eight. Thank you. Page 3, lines 16 through 19. This we felt like this section asks us to tell people that they could use some other identification that is something that is that isn't federally compliant to get on a plane. And we disagree with that. We do not feel like that. We've heard from Homeland Security that's not going to be an option, and we feel like that would be telling somebody something that is false, and so we'd like to delete that. I think I missed that the other night.
Representative Ledoux.
Is it possible to hear from somebody from the Department of Homeland Security as to what will be acceptable or will not be acceptable? We keep hearing about what the Department of Homeland Security is saying or isn't saying. I'd kind of like to hear from the department what they're planning on doing.
I can comment quickly before, Ms. Riley, you can answer. For that reason, the Department of Administration was kind enough to facilitate a call for me and Mr. Lardy, in which we asked a whole series of questions, some of which I think are of interest to the committee, if only to sort of confirm our own understanding as we considered the bill. Do you think it would be possible for them to testify? I'm seeing a shaking head from Ms. Montalvo.
Through Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Ledoux. I don't know. They tend not to, but they have a pretty extensive website where we get the information of what they're accepting, what they will accept, what the deadlines are. We do have conversations with them quite a bit when we have questions, but their website's pretty clear on what kind of ID. And I can send that out to you, either the list or the link, both, but it's pretty clear.
And if I may, Ms. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. There is no requirement to fly on an aircraft. The only requirement is you have to go through additional screening. And I've witnessed that firsthand on March 1st, which I mentioned at the last committee hearing. And when asked, I think with ACLU, I asked them whether or not there was any requirement to fly, and the answer was no. There's no requirement for ID to fly. You just have to go through additional screening. And additional screening, in my case, is I had a black bag with my paperwork in there, and so they give you a red bin instead of a gray bin. And as you go through a regular scanner, you go through a pat-down, and then they go through your items, and that was it. So there is no requirement currently to have an ID to fly. And on my way back, just to make things a little bit easier, I did grab my Costco card. And by having an old Costco card, by the way, you can really see the picture, but my name matched with my ticket. And in that card, with that card, I did not have to do the red bin deal. I was still able to fly. And that was all on the same day. I flew in, flew out of Juneau Airport, flew out of Anchorage later on that night, Anchorage International Airport.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I think the key word in that is the word currently that you used. The TSA website, I'm not here to defend the TSA, but their website says pretty clearly that in October of 2020, nobody will be able to fly through a TSA airport without a federally compliant ID. So we feel like we don't want to be put in this position, and we'd like this deleted.
Number 10.
Yes, number 10, or 9.
Or 9.
Sorry, that's 9. Number 9, lines, page 4, lines 11 through 15, prohibition on data sharing. I talked about this a little bit the other night, but our department law helped us flesh it out a little bit. That, and again, I would need him to go into it a little bit more, but we do share data within other state agencies for sure. DMV shares with Public Safety, who also permanent fund dividend, looking for fraud, and Department of Labor, and also public assistance to make sure that we're preventing fraud, and child support enforcement. And we also think that this language keeps us from being able to talk about driver safety, recalls, any of those kind of interactions that we have with other agencies. And then, so we suggest that we delete there, that section. And again, the lawyer could talk about it a lot more than I can.
Representative Tuckin, I should note that Michael Stinker from the Department of Law is online.
Okay, thank you so much. So it's the prohibition of data sharing outside the state agency. And so far, the list that I heard were all within state agencies. So it doesn't limit you from sharing with Public Safety or from Permanent Fund or from all the others, unless I'm misreading this.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, correct. But again, I'd like the lawyer to expand on it. But I'd also, we also read this that says we can't share with, like, the Anchorage Police Department or other municipalities who tie into currently into our DPS database. But it's up to you if you want Michael
yeah.
Stinker to talk
Mr.
about it.
Mr. Stinker, can you comment on this question, page 4, lines 11 through 15?
Yes, through the chair, Michael Stanker, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law. Representative Tuck, to your question, the concern is that as Section 4 in Community Substitute Version J is written, it's a blanket prohibition on data sharing, and there are some exceptions. So there's an exception for sharing with a state agency, and also for administering driver's licenses. But all other current data sharing would then be prohibited. So, for example, under AS 28.10.505, that's actually a section of our current statutes that holds that personal identifying information is confidential. So that law is saying your information can't be shared, but then it creates some exceptions. And what Deputy Commissioner Rydell's letter does is it outlines some of those exceptions. So, for example, information can be shared regarding vehicle safety and recall. Information can be shared in use with litigation. Information can be shared with government agencies and law enforcement agencies. So the concern is that that type of data sharing may be prohibited if this became law.
Thank you. Mr. Stinker.
Thank you. Page 5, lines 9 through 10. This is the public safety issue. It's the same as the ID card issue, so I won't belabor that point. Page 5, lines 11 through 18, same issue that the ID cards had, that we are required to retain the copies. Page 5, lines 24 through 25, same as the ID cards, that we would like you to put something in that we could ask employees to have ID if needed. Page 5, lines 27 through 28, same as the identification card, the issue of public safety and the saving of photos. Page 6, lines 13 through 16, same as the ID cards about whether or not we had to tell people that they could fly without a federally compliant card. Page 6, lines 24 through 31, and I probably will have to have the AAG describe this a little better for me, but this came up from Representative Birch last week, I think, about the shall versus may, and this asks us to give cards only compliant cards to legal aliens who are here, and so that's a violation of the equal protection. So to fix it, we would remove federally compliant and then change the shall to may to hopefully get to that issue.
Representative Knott.
Would you kind of repeat what you just said?
In other words,
you mandated to give compliant cards to illegal immigrants. Is that what I said?
No, no.
Right.
Sorry. If I said, sorry, through the chair, Representative Knopf, if that's what I said, that is not what I meant. What I meant to say is legal aliens that are here, this is telling us that we have to only give them a compliant card. So just like everybody else who would have the choice, that we think they should have the choice, and that we think that it helps to change the shall to may to reach the goal that Representative Birch was trying to reach the other night.
And to maybe connect dots, I think the instance Representative Birch brought up that prompted this discussion was a legal alien who holds a green card from Japan, I think it was, who contacted at least some members of the committee.
A little bit of background on that.
Sure. Representative Tuck.
And I think that was from something that happened in 2014. I think Bob Lynn, Representative Lynn at the time, because he was all about, he had concerns about immigrants. And I think he offered an amendment. It was against many of us on that one, but it sounds like that the administration hasn't been following it anyway. So, but it was something that was just recently put in because he wanted to make sure that those who had longer longer ability to stay in America or in Alaska, they would still have to be required to come back year after year, which I think is erroneous. So, thank you.
Ms. Rydell?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, actually I'm glad you brought that up. There was a misstatement the other night, and Michael Stanker could talk about it more. There's actually in that law where I thought maybe we weren't complying with our own law, but he talked to me afterwards and told me I was incorrect. There's an ambiguity, and he felt that we were applying it fairly, but that this would help clean it up because actually what happens with our statutes, we are so heavily regulated, just this issue, we end up with conflicting things sometimes. And so he thought we were fine. We weren't just breaking the law the other.
Thank you. Please continue. Representative Ledoux.
So it still sounds like the problem that the person who wrote the letter, whose wife wanted to get, who has an indefinite immigration status, still has to go down there every year?
I might comment, and you can correct me if I'm getting this wrong, Ms. Rydell. The CS has written, yes, that's the case, and I think there's an intent, at least on my part, to see an amendment that will change that and concur with the Department of Administration's recommendations. And correct me if I'm wrong, this language was also, did it exist in the original HB 74, the shall language?
Through Mr. Chair, yes. It said shall, and that's when the constituent asked it to be may. Mr. Chair, I think it's in the law, not just the bill.
Sure, sure.
So, yes.
Are we on 16?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Page 7, lines 26 through 30. We like this. This is something that we had also put in as an amendment through the committee, that we would not share our bulk photos in a bulk way outside of the state of Alaska. And am I done? Maybe I'm done. Sorry. That's all.
Thank you. At this time, because I think some of these amendments are low-hanging fruit, so to speak, work our way through the amendments, and I might ask Ms. Rydell if you could stay up and speak to amendments as they come, and perhaps Mr. Glad, if you could also, I think we can squeeze two chairs up, and if there are questions for either of you, we can sort of proceed as needed. Barring further thoughts from the committee, proceed with amendment number 1. Madam Vice Chair?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Representative Knopf, a question.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Rydell, so we've got a bunch of amendments. We got a committee substitute. We got the letter from administration. I'm a little concerned that we're going to go through all these amendments, and if they're not all adopted, I'm not so sure we're going to end up with the product that you guys want to see at the end of the day. So I think my question is, if we just pass a couple of amendments, you guys can be good with that, or are you still going to oppose this legislation, or we spend a lot of time for naught here, you know? We have to have all or none, I guess, is my question.
Through the chair, Mr. Representative Knopp, I actually haven't seen any of the amendments, so I can't answer whether we'll support it or not. I think I'm going to be looking at them as you do. And we don't oppose the legislation. Well, to be non-compliant, we oppose that for sure. We're just pointing out things that we don't like about the CS for sure. But if we're non-compliant, it is a problem.
Well, it's a matter of opinion there. But okay, thank you.
But I don't know about those amendments because I haven't seen them. So.
One moment. Representative Ledoux.
Okay, I move amendment number one.
J.1.
Amendment number J.1. But is this amendment one, or have we already adopted amendments?
We haven't adopted any amendments.
Okay, so. I move amendment one, which is J.1.
I'll object for purposes of discussion, and we'll take a brief at ease while the amendment makes its way to the Deputy Commissioner. Going back on the record, so I believe we were at, Madam Vice Chair, objecting. I was objecting to amendment number one, J.1, for purposes of discussion. Amendment one, Mr. Glatt, could you speak to amendment J.1?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So amendment J.1 appears to address a concern that was expressed by the Department of Law when they provided a memo with the current CS that there wasn't an affirmative obligation for someone to create space on the application where an applicant would be able to indicate that they understand the options for compliant and non-compliant cards and indicate which one they chose. That is what this amendment would fix.
And Ms. Rydell, I know you're seeing this on the fly. Any thoughts? And I might also open this up to Mr. Stanker. Or Ms. Rydell.
Through the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are these available online for him to look at, too, or not? I'm not sure if they're...
I'm afraid not. Oh, okay. A lot of them came from the drafters just in the last few hours.
I'm sorry. I might ask Mr. Glatt. I'm sorry. I'm not sure exactly what this does different. Oh. Mr. Chair, maybe I'll ask a question. Is this saying to put it in statute versus regulation? Is that what you're...
I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but the memorandum that was accompanied the current CS mentioned that it was too passive whose obligation it was to include that information on the application.
Okay.
I think it this time might hold amendment J.1 until we can sort of do further diligence. Madam Vice Chair.
So I'm just sort of wondering, does this get into whether anybody's going to tell people that they don't need this thing for the airport, or they do need this, which apparently is of some dispute?
Through the chair, I don't think it does. Looking at it, it looks like it tells us that we should just put on the application that a person understands the options for them, compliant or non-compliant, I'm guessing, and the types of ID cards. So for driver's license and ID cards, I think that's what it does. from what I can just read real fast. So I don't think it tells us that we have to say that your non-compliant driver's license would get you on a plane.
Okay, thank you.
I don't think so.
Representative Wool, I
you don't want to talk to me. Fine.
I think we might hold Amendment J.1 until we can get this distributed to Mr. Stanker and the department can have this may not be the proverbial low hanging fruit.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Knopp.
Would it be maybe a more appropriate, Mr. Chair, or not? To not by any means trying to delay, but I'd rather take a recess here and let everybody review the amendments so we don't sit here and debate them amendment by amendment. They can form an opinion, have the discussions internally. Might be more appropriate than we might be hours debating amendment by amendment and what it does, and they haven't had time to thoroughly vet them. And I've never been in a process where we've allowed so many members of the public to comment on amendments they haven't yet reviewed, when really that debate belongs to us up here. I just ask the question, Mr. Chairman, do whatever you think is appropriate, but just something to consider.
Yeah, I think that's a point well taken. And the other tension is the desire to move expeditiously on this bill. And of course, those two are in some conflict. I mean, what I think might make sense at this time is we could recess, and a few of these amendments are relatively simple and do correlate specifically to the recommendations in the administration's letter and make technical fixes and other fixes, and maybe take a recess, identify those amendments, perhaps we can take action on those, and then, as mentioned previously, sort of keep the process open for further deliberation and also any other amendments that might be forthcoming that speak to the department's letter. So that's sort of my initial thinking, trying to sort of balance the desire to move quickly and take action on the bill and also sort of allow better circulation of the amendments. So I'll take a quick recess and confer with the department, and we can see which amendments might make sense to consider today. Going back on the record, so I think despite our desire to move expeditiously, this is just going to be sort of too fast and too on the fly. Apologies to everyone involved, but I think there are two amendments that we can probably consider today that would be worthwhile, and those amendments, if you look at the guide, a list of amendments would be Amendment J.2 and Amendment J.5. J.5 relates to the price of driver's license and the capital cost associated and the sort of payback period. I guess I would turn to you, Madam Vice Chair, if you would consider withdrawing Amendment 1 and moving Amendment 2.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move to withdraw Amendment Number 1.
Seeing, hearing, no objection. Amendment Number 1 is withdrawn. Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, I move Amendment Number 2, which is J.2.
I will object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Rydell, if you've had the chance to review Amendment J.2, do you have any perspective or opinion on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Leslie Rydell again. I think that I believe even the alleged legal drafter thought it was odd, or I don't know if that's the right word, to mention a specific organization in a bill, and so I think we're fine taking that out.
Okay. I think at this time I'm going to withdraw my objection to Amendment J.2, which deletes the specific mention of the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators from the bill. Is there any further objection?
Mr. Chair, I object.
Sure. Representative Tuck.
I just have some questions. Okay, so what does this do, removing it? I guess is my big question. I mean, what does it do? I mean, why is it necessary? I think that the reason why it's spelled out is because this is to be Real ID compliant. This is the only organization that is dealing with it, and there might be some in the future, but for now, this is the one. So, I'm not understanding the purpose of Amendment Number 2.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, Ms. Rydell, do you remember, was the specific mention of AMVA in the original legislation?
Through, Mr. Chair, no, this is came out in the CS, and this is not something we asked to be changed or not, so, and we didn't ask to be put in or put out. But I think our opinion would be that any other system managed by an entity other than the department includes any other system. So I think a memo that I believe Ledge Legal wrote indicated they thought that was odd to mention a, I hope I'm not making this up, if I read that, am I correct that I read that in a memo that they thought it was odd to refer to an agency or an entity in the bill?
Yeah, and that's syncing with my memory. So this was a sort of a something that came up in drafting and wasn't intended with the CS, and so we're seeking to remove it. Questions? Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So although it may appear odd, but we are a member of the association, and the language is clearly intent language not to allow them to administer it. So although we find it odd, is it really inappropriate is my question. Would it be any harm in leaving it? If your intent was to specify that absolutely no one else other than division, and I guess probably the concern would be that we are a member of that organization. So I just ask that question.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I don't think we cared if it was in there or not. So.
Okay, thank you.
And I don't see anyone online from legislative legal, and I'm not sure Mr. Stanker has had time to review the amendment. So I think at this time we can hold this amendment. This may not be the proper bill for it, which would leave us with just one amendment to consider today, which I think we can make progress on because that is a substantive policy call that we need to make eventually.
Would you like me to?
Yes, Madam Vice Chair.
Yeah, I withdraw amendment number 2.
And that will take us to, I think the only amendment that may be worth considering today is amendment J.5. And I know, Madam Vice Chair, we've had conversations about this. Is there a motion?
Yeah, I move amendment number 3. J.5.
I will object for purposes of discussion. Amendment J.5 relates to the price for a compliant identification card and committee testimony with the $10 marginal increase for the price of a real ID compliant ID. The payback period was 5 years, I believe is right. And so amendment number 3, J.5, would increase that to $20 over the cost of a non-compliant card and reduce the payback period to, I believe, 2.5 years. But I want to confirm those statements with you, Ms. Rydell, for accuracy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Ledoux. I think yes, because we're, again, basing it on about 50% of people getting a real ID. If fewer people get a real ID, it might be longer than 2.5 years, but obviously a double would make it faster no matter how many got it, and if more got it, it'd be even faster.
Are there any questions or comments from the committee on Amendment J.4?
And just point of order, I'm going to object so we can discuss it, but if I may, I do have a question.
Sure, Representative Tuck.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So and this goes back to the line of questioning that we had earlier on the fees, and from what I heard earlier is that there are fees to AAMVA that we pay on a per ID basis, and that's in the fiscal note. But then I also heard something about having to pay for fees if somebody comes in with a passport for verification that we'll get charged for. And I wasn't quite understanding that, because I would think that if a passport is compliant to fly, to get on federal bases, and actually sounds like it's more of a higher ranking card than a real ID card, why would we be paying fees for verification of a passport?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I think people forge passports too, and this would allow us, I mean, it would be require us actually, if you brought in a passport, that we check with the passport database to make sure it's a legitimate passport and that nobody forged the passport that was brought in, if I'm answering your question correctly. And we get charged on the ding, the ping.
Follow-up, Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. So does that mean that the passport, see, that's under which department? That's under Department of State. Does that mean that they also have to be part of the specs spec system?
Through the chair, I would have to ask Marla. I don't. They're not a part of the specs. They're a separate database that we check. We check the Department of State's database.
And Representative Tuck, just for sort of germaneness, is this relating to the price of a compliant real ID or driver's license, a real ID compliant driver's license? The question about passports.
Yes, because I still have questions about the fiscal note, and I just want to make sure that if the fiscal note is reflecting all the fees and memberships, then I'm okay with it. But I'm not sure that it does. So we had some questions earlier about that, and so because the purpose I think of this amendment is to buy down the burden quicker rather than later.
Mm-hmm. And so your question, Representative Tuck, is whether this amendment and increasing the cost of a real ID compliant ID may not actually reduce the time that the investment is paid back?
May not be reducing it in the time that we were trying to do. Yes.
Representative Ledoux.
I think perhaps Representative Tuck's point is that the fiscal note, which right now reflects $1.5 million, may not also include the amount of money that it costs to belong to some of these organizations and pay dues and things like that. Do I understand correctly?
Yes, that's through the chair. That's correct. And so I just want to make sure. We were looking at hopefully buying it down to, like, I think, believe down to 2 years. And so I just want to make sure we're still able to do that.
I mean, I think that's a point well taken, but perhaps broader than this particular amendment. And I mean, as Ms. Rydell noted, there's assumptions. I mean, we can make assumptions on what percentage of people will choose a real ID compliant ID, and that will dictate the payback period. But I think it seems like a safe statement to make that if you increase the price, the payback period will be reduced fundamentally. We certainly won't know exactly what that payback period will end up being, but it will certainly be reduced. But your point's well taken, Representative Tuck and Ledoux. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm trying to understand this because I think, and help me out here, are we doubling the price again after we already doubled it once?
That's what the amendment would do, Representative Wohl.
And if I may follow up. So if we started with a $5 surcharge that was going to say take 10 years, then we double that to $10, which will reduce it to 5 years. That's an increase of $5. So if we double it again, that's an increase of $10. So I understand the doubling, but if you just increase it by $5, it should reduce it. $15 should bring it down to 2.5 years and not a $20, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not an expert on amortization tables or anything. But the other question is, is there a need? I mean, I understand this is $1.5 million investment, I believe. Whether we pay it, is 5 years too long and we're reducing it to 2.5, or really reducing it maybe even less? If we pay it off in a year, 1.75, I mean, we're still going to keep charging for the ID. It just means now it's going to be a surplus and it's going to go into the kitty of the DMV or the DOA. She's shaking her head. So I mean, are suddenly then, oh, we paid it off. We can reduce the fee. So the first, you know, few thousands of IDs pay a lot, and then the price goes down. I just don't understand the motivation for knocking it down.
Let Ms. Rydell comment because she was shaking her head, and then Representative Liu. Right.
Thank you. Sorry to use nonverbal. Through the chair, Representative Wool, the money comes back to the general fund. It does not come to our department and doesn't stay at the DMV, so we do return the money to the general fund. But I think to your other point, after we paid off the initial investment, yes, that would just increase the amount of money that the DMV, right now the DMV gives, like, I think it's either between 30 and 40 million a year back to the general fund. It would just increase that, probably.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as much as I love supporting the general fund and paying down the price of equipment and whatever it costs to set this thing up, and I understand being price neutral would be great if this didn't increase our expenses, but it sounds like by going from 5, then to 10, now to $20 additional fee, that we're not only going to pay this equipment down or the investment down quickly, we will then have a surplus that will then go into the general fund. Again, something I support, but maybe another means of supporting the general fund besides doubling it's the old practice of doubling license fees. Whatever license it is, let's double or triple the fee. In this case, going from 5 to 20, quadruple the fee to, you know, add money to the state coffer, which, you know, I don't understand necessarily that if we pay it off in 5 years with a $10 fee, that seems pretty reasonable. And it's especially since a lot of people are going to have to buy this, and it says on the bottom of your letter that you gave us today, $15 plus a $10 fee for 25, a compliant will be 20 plus 10, but now it's 20 plus 20, if I'm not mistaken. So we're up to $40 now. So someone goes into every Alaskan that wants to fly on an airplane is going to have to get an ID that's going to cost them $40. So, you know, maybe that should be thought about.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, I don't think it's the end of the world, you know, if something goes into the general fund. And, you know, I'm not thrilled with the idea of doing this in the first place. And if people want these things and they want to do it through a real ID as opposed to the $55 that a passport card would cost, you know, let them pay for it.
But other committee comments? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to make sure that we weren't going to have to increase these fees further than $20. And I agree with the Vice Chair's comments. You know, we heard testimony from Senator Bellows out of Maine, and she actually thought it would be better for us to actually subsidize the passport cards for people to get that rather than going down this route. But at this time, I'll be more than happy to remove my objection.
And I can't remember if I had an objection also or not, but I will remove my objection as well. I think we had double objections.
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear yours.
No, that's okay. but perhaps is there further objection and or comment?
Chair. Well, I mean, if the objective is to get people moving towards passport cards instead of real ID, so to get the price more comparable, and I'm not sure, I don't know anyone who has a passport card, so I don't know if you first need it. I don't know if you first need a passport, if you have to go and get a passport photo. Everyone's shaking their head, so they almost...
Well, we heard, if I may, yeah. Mr. Chair.
And really, really quickly, that's Representative, fine. Would you like to object to this amendment to sort of continue deliberation? Well, there's a motion made, so just in terms of process to keep it clean.
I'll support the state.
is there any further objection from the committee on Amendment number 3, J.5. Seeing none, amendment number 3 is adopted. And per earlier comments, I think we're just moving a little bit too fast to really do any due consideration of the other amendments at hand. They'll be uploaded to BASIS shortly. And, of course, committee members now have them electronically and in print, and the administration will make sure that happens as well. So I think we will hold consideration of all further amendments to make sure that they can be sort of duly considered, and thanks for the forbearance of committee members. And I mentioned earlier that we would probably recess to the call of the chair, and I would like to do that, and I've been in touch with committee members, and we'll sort of assess what schedules might look like in the next day or two to consider deliberation. Also to the administration, through their letter and their detailed comments, there may be additional amendments forthcoming to speak to those requests for changes. So there may be amendments beyond the seven that are on the crib sheet right now. So I know this has been messy, and I apologize, again, trying to balance desire to move quickly and to have good process. Comments, Representative Wohl. Any other comments or questions on process going forward? Representative Tuck.
No, I didn't think that this was messy at all. It's just it's a big bill. That's all. And you're handling everything really well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's very, I would say, generous and charitable. Well, Representative Knopp.
I was just going to make the same comment. You know, the committee process is fine, Mr. Chair. It just, we've got seven amendments here. The administration's letters recommends numerous amendments, and there's just a lot to process. And so, but the process is fine. It's working good. Thank you. So.
Well, I will continue to be in close touch with all of you and you, Ms. Rydell, going forward, and we can figure out the timing. But for now, I will recess to the call of the chair, seeing no further comments, and we will resume consideration at another time.